Blog Talk Radio.
All right, here we are, fightradio.info, and we are back with another week. And this is Psychic Tom, and we are waiting to connect with Rich and Tony, and they should be on in just a minute. And we have lots to discuss this week. We had the UFC last weekend. Myself and Tony seen some live boxing in Philadelphia, and Tony will be bringing us up to speed on that. And we have a few other little surprises here in our. We've had a few technical issues, and our show may be a little short tonight, but please bear with us. And it should be on here in just a second. And for our guest tonight, we will be talking to a UFC heavyweight, Soa the Hulk Pelele. I hope I'm pronouncing his name correct. And he's recently signed a four-fight contract with the Ultimate Fighting Championship, signed that in March. And this will be the second time around. He was with the organization briefly in 2007. And Pelele is also a Pride veteran, been around since 2002, and he's had some very interesting fights, so should be entertaining talking to him. And he was scheduled to fight Stipe Miocic in the last UFC, which occurred last Saturday, but there were a few changes made, and Stipe had to step in and fight Roy Nelson, and we'll be discussing that one in detail also. And Mr. Pelele hails from Australia, and he's on quite a win streak, and he hasn't lost a fight since 2010, so, and he has a very interesting resume, so we'll look forward to that. So, Rich, see if we can connect with Rich and Tony here in just a second. Hello, Rich? Tony? Anyone hear me?
Tom?
Yeah, Tony?
No, it's Rich.
Oh, Rich, okay. All right. Sound a little different. All right. Well, anyways, here we are. So I gave a little brief intro, and I also mentioned that our show will be a little short tonight, so I imagine we can get right to what we're going to get to.
All right. Well, I'm trying to work on a fix here to get back on Skype with another computer, so I might be able to pull it off. But I had to let Soa know earlier today the situation. I tried to set it up last night, and I got the message back that they had just let him know what was going on. It's 4 a.m. over in, I guess, Australia, where he's from.
Mm-hmm.
So, long story short, we're probably better off having him on next week when we have this situation under control.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I was kind of looking forward to it. I had looked at his record, and it's kind of funny. You know, I hadn't put the name, I hadn't made the association, and I guess he was due to fight Stipe. And then, of course, we had the little personnel switch there, and funny how things shake out like that. But, yeah, he's had quite an entertaining career, quite a long career. But, boy, lots to talk about this week.
Not getting any pushover in his debut.
No.
Guys, 15-0, I think it was. I don't have the record right in front of me, but another guy, Russian guy, I think.
Well, you know, I think at this stage, I mean, so has been around for a while. So at this point, it's let's do it or else. So.
Now, do you have the studio open up for Blog Talk Radio?
Yes.
Okay.
Everything should be okay.
That's where the numbers pop up, and you have to click on the little microphone.
I click on the microphone. The one where it's right next to Blog Talk Radio. Hello, Reg. Okay, guys, I'm going to have to get back in again, I guess. Apparently, we are disconnected here. So let me... Tony, Rich, can you guys hear me? Hey, Tony, I can't hear you at all. Okay, can anyone hear me? Okay. Okay, Rich, Tony, anyone there?
What? Hello.
Hello, Tony? Yo, Rich?
Hello?
Rich?
We're both
Tony?
No.
Okay, we're all on.
Hey.
Okay, can you guys hear me?
Yes,
I can hear
you.
That's good.
All right, we're good. Okay.
So, anybody else have a headache?
I didn't until about 20 minutes ago. Okay.
Yeah, it's one of those days. Tom, remember I had to leave you and like go to that party?
Yeah, how'd it go?
It was horrible. I mean, I got drunk. I mean, I purposely did a shot for every beer that I drank, so I had made up for lost time real quick. We eventually got back to my friend's house at around 4:15 in the morning. But there were some people that I would rather have gone to the casino after party because I know there were going to be people there that I, didn't have feuds with. So
yeah.
I had to go to a place where there were people I did have feuds with and be nice. And you know how I feel about being nice. It was an all-around rough time. But the gentleman who I left the after party for to his party pissed me off today. And I know Rich, being from going to the Air Force Academy, then VMI, everything's very regimented. Like, when I do all my stuff, I'm very regimented. And this guy, every day, is looking late. And today was 30 minutes late and threw off my whole workout. And it was, oh, well, what's the big deal? I'll show you what the big deal is.
Okay, so it sounds like been a lovely day all the way around, Tom.
Well,
been a lovely day all the way around.
Oh, yeah. So what did you think of the fights last week?
Oh, first off, I just love your recaps, too. I mean, I see how you take your notes. You do it like a lot like I do, and I remember thinking later that night, there's an old cliche, great minds think alike. And, I think I like the turnout. I think things went as smooth as you could ask for. The intermission was just right at the right time. There was nothing excessive. It didn't drag on and on and on. And I don't think we had anyone in there that didn't give everything they had. And what more can you ask for?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the fact – I've been to some cards. There's one promoter out of Philadelphia. I refuse to attend any of his cards anymore because they're always a mess. And I remember going to one of his a couple of years ago, and he was supposed to have about 8 fights on the card. It got knocked down to about 4 fights, 3 of them being 4-rounders and a 6-rounder. And the 3 4-rounders went the distance. The 6-rounder ended with a 3rd-round knockout. So basically, you were paying the same price that we paid for our tickets, about $45, and you got a total of 15 rounds of action.
Yeah.
Well, the other night,
yes. That would be $3 a round, not counting the beer.
Yeah, pretty much. And it wasn't like a lot of the rounds were even that good. The other night, all but really 1 or 2 of the fights were competitive. I think 9 fights might have been a little too much because, every fight went to the final round. Most of the fights did go the distance, and then the one fight was a stoppage in the last round. That's why the card dragged on for almost 5 hours. But you know what? I'd rather have a card when you got more bang for your buck and instead of not enough bang for your buck.
Mm-hmm. And I think that the main event, it just led up to a nice crescendo, almost like you said in your wrap-up that a lot of times the second time around doesn't live up to the first one.
Right.
We cannot complain. I mean, I hope we can. I'd like to have either one of those guys on the show to talk about it.
Yeah, and like I said, I know Harry pretty well. Rich, I don't know if you saw my Facebook status a day or two ago, but when I got to the place, the casino, I told my dad to go downstairs and get in line to get into the ballroom. I went upstairs to find Tom. And so I'm standing out front of the lobby, right where the casino area is, and who do I see but Harry Yorgi, the main event fighter. So I waved to him, and I'm talking to him a little bit. And I got on my Rocky Marciano shirt, the same one from the Marciano Foundation, and it says Rocky Marciano, heavyweight champion of the world, 49-0. And there's this kid there, and I guess he's around like 22, 23 years old, big baggy T-shirt on, about three sizes too big, pants falling off his ass, a pink hat turned on sideways. And he looked at me and he goes, wow, man, 49-0. That's awesome. Is he fighting tonight? And I said, who? He goes, man, the guy on your shirt, I heard it was a rematch, man. I guess he won the first fight if he's 49-0. I said, that's Rocky Marciano. I said, Harry Yorgi's fighting the main event. Yeah, but what about the guy in your shirt, man? That's what it is. I said, dude, that's Rocky Marciano. He was the heavyweight champ of the world back in the 50s. He's been dead for nearly 44 years. The guy looked at me like I was speaking another language.
Well, you know the old cliche, everyone has to start somewhere, and everyone has to get educated. And we should have gave him a card with our connection on there, you know, so he could tune into the show every week and learn.
I'll definitely be on the remedial. I'd have to do some, you know, I'd have to break out my professor.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I remember our job is not to just entertain, but to educate as well as entertain. So,
good point. But no, overall, I mean, I think the card turned out really well. You know, and then, we got to see so many cool people. And like I said, I always like doing the local cards because I know so many people. You know, I was talking to Kamaru Paisley after his win. You know, he struggled a little bit early, but once he shook that rust off, he did fine. Talking to Garrett, the Ultimate Warrior Wilson, who's, you know, in line, moving his way up their cruiserweight ranks. We saw Tex Cobb there. We didn't get a chance to talk to him. But, you know, it was just overall a good quality evening, and I'm glad they're having fights there, not just because it's only about 30 minutes from my house. But it's a good little venue. You know, they got the casino there, and, you know, they got a little nightclub there, and it's they got a craps table there, a couple of them, which is something I'm very fond of. So a definite place I'd definitely be interested in going to in the future.
Yeah, and I hope we can get Kamal on the show too. I mean, he looked great that night. You know, I think he made the right adjustments he needed to.
Yeah, I know. I'm talking to a mutual friend who's helped like do some advisement work for Kamal. A little bit upset because he didn't think he pressed the action enough when he had Stauffer hurt, and he's like he danced a little bit too much. And he's like, he didn't press the action. He goes, that fight was close, you know. If he would have lost the decision, he really would have regretted it. And and I can see where he was coming from, but at the same time, knowing Kamaru like I do and seeing him fight before, he is not a very aggressive fighter. He is more of a guy that likes to hang back and counterpunch. The uppercut that he knocked Stauffer down with was a timed counterpunch. And at the same time, remember, this is a guy that's almost 39 years old. He hasn't fought in over 2 years. And I could see after he had that big explosion in the third round that he was a little bit winded and he had to take a little bit of time off to get a second win to finish strong, almost like Harry Yorgi ended up doing in the main event.
Yeah. And also remember that that Stauffer fellow was just one of those brawlers that – you know that infighting takes a lot out of you with a guy that strong. I mean, you know, you could see what a bull that guy was and a tough guy. So, I mean, just because he got knocked down, he got back up. And you know, we've seen this happen before where someone just gets wild and sloppy after they get a knockdown and then they wind up not the knocker but the knockee. So, I mean, I've seen it happen. I'm sure you have. So
yeah.
I think he did the right thing. And it's like I said to him, I said, you know, maybe he could have won a slugfest, but why give your opponent his best and maybe only chance to win? Just so.
Exactly.
All right.
I did end up getting to watch the HBO card the next day, which was not really that surprising. Mikey Garcia pretty much dismantled Juan Manuel Lopez, as expected. Garcia lost his title on the scales. They said he really dehydrated himself from 128. Couldn't get down to 126. So it was a situation where if Garcia won, which he did, the title was vacated. if Lopez won, since he had made the weight, he would get the title. So Garcia won fourth round pretty impressively, and the title is now vacant.
Can you guys hear me?
Oh, yeah, we're here.
I just broke down. Did you hear my recap of the HBO card?
Yes.
Okay, good. And then we had Friday night NBC fights. Brian Bye-Bye Jennings fought a very, very, very tough fighter in Andre Fedotov. And actually, I was talking to Fedotov's cat man, Joey I, Saturday night in Prussia. It was a tough fight. You know, Jennings hit him with some bombs, and he couldn't discourage him. But he ended up damaging his left eye. That's the one thing I said to my dad as we were watching the fight. I said, and that's what happened. His left eye just exploded and it swelled up to the point where he couldn't see anymore and they stopped the fight. And then the one close feature, Kidley Marr from Ghana, coming off a long layoff, beat the hometown bully Ronald Cruz by a unanimous decision. He really dissected Ronald over the 10-round distance. So a very impressive comeback for Sugar Ray Nahr. But it was another good show on NBC Sports. I'm glad they're doing these shows now. And my my good friend Gary Rosado was the referee of the main event, or the referee of the one undercard fight, so of course I got to give him a hard time. But so this is always getting your ugly mug on TV, Gary.
Yeah, I remember. Now, didn't he referee the first NBC card on mainstream television, the one last December? Wasn't he a ref for one of those fights?
He refereed the Steve Cunningham-Thomas Adamack fight.
Okay, yeah.
The one that we talked to Steve a couple of weeks later. Well, I was watching that with some friends of mine at the Three Lot. We're sitting there, and the one guy is a kid I grew up with. The other guy I only met about a year or so ago. We're watching the fight together, and I said, "Guys, see that referee?" And they said, "Yeah." I said, "He's an Italian guy." I said, "Yeah." I said, "I got a Christmas card from him 3 days ago."
Mm-hmm.
I said, we go back, and because he was the guy that got the boxing program started at Lock Haven back in the late 70s, Gary Rosado. Mm-hmm. And he's now starting to get some minor title fights and some fights on ESPN and NBC now, so it's good for him. He's a good young referee.
Mm-hmm. Now, have you heard anything about any cards coming back on regular free TV on NBC? Have you heard anything at all about that?
I have not. I know they did that one. The NBC Sports has been doing like some of the cards like sometimes on a Saturday evening in prime time. I have not heard anything else about any more cards like the Cunningham card that we had a few months ago. But I'll look into that. Hey, that's always a good thing. Anytime you could put a good fight on free TV and get people to watch it, you have nothing else to do. Hey, you can get a gain of fame.
Yeah, exactly, because it still goes back, you know, like we were talking about all the stuff that they had on free. You know, back in the 70s and 80s, I mean, every weekend was sometimes it would be different channels. And if we could just get more of that, because, I mean, it's great that we're getting stuff on NBC Sports, but a lot of people don't have that compared to the actual regular NBC. I mean, it just dwarfs it as far as viewership. So hopefully we can see it going a good direction. So,
I mean, one of the things I said about 13 or so years ago when they were getting rid of USA's Tuesday Night Fights, which was a staple for, you know, about, you know, almost two decades. And I just remember, you know, when guys were coming up, when Olympians were coming out of the Olympics, the Floyd Mayweathers, the Tarvers, before that, you know, the De La Hoyas, you had guys like Arturo Gatti. A lot of these guys came up on those airwaves, and a lot of them became pay-per-view stars. Well, how are you going to be able to sell a guy? Like, you might have a fighter out there that's a really good fighter, but he basically builds up, maybe has a fight on ESPN, but I don't know the way ESPN does it now, because you don't have Like, I knew every Tuesday, 9 o'clock, USAP's going to play. With ESPN, it's usually on Fridays, but then they go on hiatus for 4 months. And then sometimes it's 8 o'clock, sometimes it's 9 o'clock, sometimes it's 9:30. Oh, sometimes they've got to wait until the poker championships end. The
Exactly. I've seen it start at 10:30 sometimes.
Neither can I, especially if I went to work early that morning, or if I'm working the next day. I'm like, well, shit, I got to go to bed. And it's aggravating, and then it hurts. You don't build up a following that way. So now you get a good young player, and we'll say a guy like Harry Yorgi or another, had a couple good undefeated fighters on the card. The one kid that was managed by Nazim Richardson, Bernard Hopkins' trainer. You get this big young prospect, and then you put him in ESPN. But nobody sees it. Next thing you know, he's fighting an HBO fight. And you're like, well, I don't have HBO, but I'm not going to run over my buddy's house to dust because I don't know who the hell this guy is. But you get these fights on a Tuesday night fight. It's something every week, same time, same channel. Easy to find. You help build. You know, and then guys say, oh, wait. Hey, I just saw this Harry Yorgi. I saw him fight a couple times on USA. Oh, he's going to fight so-and-so now? Yeah, I want to see that fight.
Right.
That's where you help build your viewership. I mean, hey, but Tom, to be honest, I mean, if they brought back stuff like NBC, CBS, ABC, give you them afternoon cards on a Saturday afternoon, it's the summertime, you know, take facts, sit down, have a few beers, and then, you know, you're not losing your whole day because you got maybe 4:30 to 6:30. And then it's over, you go out to dinner, maybe you go out and, you know, hit a bar or something. It's a good all-around win-win situation.
Yeah, and like you were saying, too, that with ESPN2, and I mean, God bless them, they have something, but then in September, we've got that hiatus till January.
Yep.
And, you know, Tuesday night fights, you know, that was 52 weeks.
Yeah. Only time, you know, it was funny when, and I don't have it anymore because obviously I didn't even write it on the computer back then, but when they were going off the air back, I think it was the summer of 1998, and, you know, I was good about it in like, the spring of that year, like, okay, Tuesday Night Fight is going off the air in like 4 months, and it's because this new guy, Barry Diller, had taken over, was Viacom or whatever it was that owned USA, and he wanted to appeal to a younger audience, and he felt boxing, you know, wasn't getting that. And I remember writing a letter, and I'm sure the letter never made it to his desk, but it made me feel like I was doing something, kind of like an Animal House. It was a stupid and futile gesture, but somebody had to do it. Well, that was me. I remember writing a letter and saying, you want to appeal to a younger audience, but you're keeping Wimbledon, you're keeping the Westminster Dog Show. Oh, yeah, young audiences love that. like something else. I'm like, oh, yeah, Murder, She Wrote. I know the young audiences jump all over that. And, like, it was sarcastic, but it was fact-based.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like, oh, you're stupid, or, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. No, you don't know what you're talking about, and here's why. You're getting something that has a lot of viewers. The ratings are always good. But you're going to keep the Westminster freaking Dog Show. Yeah. Those are my 2 weeks to go to bed early on Tuesday nights.
Yeah, and I don't know where he's coming from with the young audience because, I mean, there's one way to expose young people to the sport and put on some exciting fights. You got a fan for, you got fans for life.
A couple years ago, in fact, I think I was writing for Fight News Unlimited at the time because I think I covered this fight, but it was down in South Philly, same place where they had that card last year with Brian Jennings and Maurice Byram, who's a former best of ours, down in South Philly, and I'm hoping this place reopens. I think they were doing some remodeling, and I'm hoping so. But I was there for a friend of mine was fighting on the card, so we had pretty good seats. And a father was there, and he took about his 9-year-old son and his son's best friend. And these kids were sitting in the same row as me. And, you know, I mean, I was just talking to them a little bit. Hey, guys, you're going to see the fight. Oh, this fight's going to be a good one. And these kids were getting excited. Well, when the guy that won the main event was a friend of mine, when he got out of the ring and then, you know, kind of came over to see me, I just want to motion him to say hi to the kids, and he did. These kids' eyes, damn, they popped out of their heads. This guy's like, even though he was only 130-pounder, to him, these kids, he was larger than life. He was like, you know, Rocky Balboa. And, you know, he comes over and says hi to them. Oh, it was awesome. I remember getting an email. Yeah, you know, I was doing the Fight News Unlimited because I had a card that I gave him. And the father emailed me a couple days later and just thanked me. And all his, you know, his son and his son's son kept talking about was, Dad, when can we go to the fights again?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I'll shift gears a little here and get to the news I've gathered. I sent you guys the email there with a lot of this stuff, but the top story I got is, like I said, it's probably not going to happen with MMA in New York, and they've made it official now. They're not even going to put it to the vote because they don't think they have enough support. And the Speaker of the House there, or the Assembly, said that more than 40 of the 104 Assembly Democrats opposed the measure. And while the bill likely had enough votes to pass, if it made it to the floor, it would have needed help from the GOP minority, and it's rare for the majority party to take up a bill that can't pass without assistance from the Republicans. So they just basically decided not to even pursue it. And, of course, Lorenzo Fertitta did not agree. He called the charges that mixed martial arts is anti-woman and leads to domestic violence, quote, this year's new, absurd, offensive, and completely erroneous, unquote, excuse to kill the bill. And New York remains, of course, one of two states to ban MMA, even though Connecticut is still just waiting for the governor's signature on their bill. So some people are kind of disappointed, the critics pretty much use the culinary party line there, saying that the sport is anti-woman and anti-gay.
You know, that is not even worthy of a comment. But you know, I feel sorry for the folks that train there, like in Matt Serra's gym. I mean, I was in Long Island a few years ago. Have a friend there, and coincidentally, he lives about a mile from Serra's gym, and he's not a MMA fan. He didn't know who Matt Serra was, but you know, I just feel bad for the guys that train there that would like to fight in front of their hometown. And Matt Serra, I guess we'll never get the chance to do that.
Well, I'm pretty sure it'll get through next year. For some reason, the culinary's campaign worked this year. I would think that it's not just a matter of these people actually believing that line, just because a few fighters and some while the president himself has made some stupid comments and said some stupid things, that the whole sport is like that. Well, they're not even basing their analysis on the whole sport. They're just going after the UFC because of what, you know, the culinary has put out there. That the UFC fighters have been saying and the president has been saying. So, you know, to equate that to the whole sport is just wrong in general. But I think it also has to have something to do with these union guys probably saying, well, if you vote for this, I'm not gonna recommend to the union that we vote for you next time you run for office. So I would think that has a lot to do with them suddenly deciding, well, it's a women's anti-gay issue. But, you know, it's just one big political wall there, and hopefully they'll knock it down.
There would be another part of me, though, if I'm calling the shots with the UFC. So, well, okay, you don't want us there, fine. We'll spend our money we'll have our events somewhere else. We'll let some other states and cities make the money.
Yeah.
But I know that would be wrong, but that would kind of be my emotional reaction.
You know what's funny, Tom? When you brought that up, it made me think of something. Back in 1995, on a boxing level, I mean, obviously not as big of a level as this, but Mike Tyson had just gotten out of prison. He had his first fight in Las Vegas against Peter McNeely. He was getting ready for his second fight, and they wanted to bring him back to Atlantic City because in the late 80s, you know, Mike Tyson had a lot of his title defenses in Atlantic City. He fought Larry Holmes there. He fought Michael Spinks there. And the governor at the time, I think, was Jim McGreevy, who ended up leaving the office in a major scandal. But he refused Mike Tyson a license in New Jersey because he did not like the type of person he was. And at the same time, you know, anti-woman, anti-gay, violent, whatever. So he refuses Mike Tyson a license. Mike Tyson takes that fight to the Philadelphia Spectrum. I wish I could have made it. Unfortunately, I had finals that week, so I didn't. That's when he came and trained at my gym. But look at the money he would have brought Atlantic City. Now you're talking about people that would have been down there, rooms, gambling, food, tickets, concessions, you know, bars. It would have brought in a lot of revenue. It would have made money. What Philadelphia, obviously we didn't have gambling at the time, but hey, we were happy to make the money. We were happy to, you know, rent our hotel rooms, and we were happy to, you know, have our bars get some business.
Yeah, exactly. And when things like that are denied, it hurts so many people. You know, it makes me think of the law of unintended consequences. There are so many servers that are out of tips, and servers and bartenders and stuff. You know, you just never know. I mean, how many cab drivers lost money? I mean, it goes on and on.
Yeah, and I didn't even thought of it that way, but yeah, you're right. Yeah, how many small people? You know, and I'm not saying that in a derogatory manner, but
no, exactly.
Yeah, could have made that money. You're right, bartenders. They could have made the tips. And you would figure you would have had a lot of high rollers down there too. Restaurants, waiters.
Well, on the other hand, I have another story that's kind of interesting. While New York is not allowing mixed martial arts, Malaysia actually made a big leap in actually having the government facilitate MMA training, believe it or not. That they're going to basically fund training programs for aspiring mixed martial artists. And the Malaysian Invasion Mixed Martial Arts Championships just happened this past Saturday. And the guest of honor there was the youth and sports minister, who said, besides the Philippines, we're probably one of the most vibrant MMA communities in Southeast Asia. I hope to lend my support to MMA as a growing sport in Malaysia. I've asked Jason Lowe, one of the organizers of this card, and the others involved in the sport to come together and set up an athletic commission association. They have to make it official first, then we can start the ball rolling and start channeling some assistance, especially funds for development. And Malaysia is one of the talent pools which Asian promotion 1FC draws upon, and capital city Kuala Lumpur is part of the 1FC circuit. Borders Thailand and Indonesia and is the 29th largest economy in the world. Pretty interesting there.
Well, we'll have to see if any of the locals can introduce the Malaysian art Silat, I believe that's how it's pronounced. See if they can incorporate that into the major four, you know. We'll see how it goes.
Right. And we had, of course, I sent you guys another story about Rick Bowe. He didn't last very long.
No.
In his Muay Thai debut there.
You mean he didn't win?
No. Got into the second round, at least. But, just couldn't take the leg kicks, unfortunately, for him. But he says it's not a setback, it's a get-back, he says. That's his exact quote. And basically, he's not calling it quits. But he said that 15 minutes after the fight, his legs were still hurting from those kicks. So he's going to have to learn how to check the kick.
Yeah, and I wonder how he felt the next day, because I found situations like that, I was always worse the next day. And sometimes two or three days, it just, and then sometimes even longer. Yeah. Well, I mean, hey, if
and according to the article I read, he didn't even land a single punch. So, I mean, not only did he get beat up, couldn't land anything.
Yeah, and then that article that you forwarded, even his opponent didn't think it was a good idea for Big Daddy to keep trying this. Remember? Remember his Russian opponent? He said, they asked him about it, and he said, no. Well, who am I to tell
him? They didn't put him in against enough of a tomato can to get him started and get his confidence up. That's not the Thai boxing way.
No, not at all. But that Russian did not look like a cheap date.
No.
Well, I mean, like I said, I'll say it a million times. I mean, he's just going to have to learn how to at least try to check those kicks. I'm not saying it's easy, but I wonder what's left of his hands at this stage of his life. I don't know.
Yeah, and then, of course, we had UFC 161 up in Canada. Evans versus Henderson in the main event there. And, Tom, you didn't get to see it, but... You know, it wasn't really all that interesting, the main event anyway. Rashad and Henderson kind of went back and forth the whole fight. It was kind of a tough decision for the judges. It ended up, I think, being a split decision for Rashad. But in a lot of ways, he lucked out because Henderson really didn't use any of his wrestling. Didn't even really look like he wanted to go for a takedown. And... it was just kind of a mess, the whole fight. Nobody really wanted to engage in a lot of situations. And Henderson didn't really use his big right hand all that much. And Evans just barely did enough to win. And he said in an interview before the fight, before he moves down, he wants to move down to middleweight, I guess, whatever the next one down is. But he wants to try to get a shot at John Jones again. And, you know, for the life of me, I can't figure out what he's going to do differently based on Henderson.
Yes, exactly. And I mean that's the unanimous consensus. And I think Henderson, I mean, Dana had pretty much said the loser of this fight is finished for title contention. So you got to wonder where Henderson's going. He's he'll be 43 this year, or if he is 43 now. But I know he's born 1970. So you got to wonder what his plans will be.
Right. Well, I don't think he's going to get a show at John Jones, and I don't think there's too many fights left on his contract either, so I would think he'd want to try to at least get a couple wins under his belt if he can before he does officially retire for this plan. But the co-main event, I think, was a little better. As your boy, Stipe.
Yes.
the crystal ball
was on the money. Yes. I will stand up and take a bow.
Yeah. So that was it was two fights in a row there. I think you got your psychic label back.
All right.
For sure.
And don't forget, Tom also predicted two wins for my friends last week, too.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I'm in a groove now. I'm feeling great. I'm in a groove. Got the old skills back. Yeah.
You know, if I didn't have to leave to go to that party, I would have drug Tom up to the roulette table and we would have cleaned out.
That's it. Would have paid for my trip back, you know. Oh, yeah. Everything went smooth. Went down to York the next day. Had a good time with the relatives and just couldn't have been better. Everything went nice and smooth. Beautiful weather and everything, but yeah, with Stipe, I understand from what I heard, he could have done a little more in the clinch, perhaps. But as far as just fighting a very strategic fight, he did what he had to do. His kicks were good, his takedowns were good, his defense was good. And I don't know if Roy was looking past him, but I do know, you know, we checked the statistics on this. Maybe we talked about it last week, that if Roy doesn't get you in the first round, his power starts to diminish a bit. And I believe, like, it was my feeling going in, that if Stipe would have lost the first round, I'd have been thrilled just that he's still around after the first round and then make some adjustments from there. But apparently he pretty much pitched a shutout. So I can't wait to see it. I don't know if anyone's put it up on YouTube yet. I haven't had time to look.
Well, it was good all around, I think, and one of the most surprising things for me is he really outboxed Roy Nelson in a lot of those rounds, too. So,
mm-hmm.
And Roy just looked physically drained by the end of the third round. He was out of it. Of course, this is the last fight of his contract, too, so there's no guarantee that they're going to re-sign him in the UFC. And if not, he'll probably end up in Bellator or World Series of Fighting there, one of those. I know the World Series of Fighting really needs heavyweights, so he would clean house there. I don't think there's anybody that really matches up to him there. Bellator, I'm not so sure about. I don't know what their heavyweight picture is like, but I know it's stronger than the World Series of Fighting, for sure. But we'd have to see what kind of bidding war they would set up to get him. I don't know. I don't really think the UFC wants him back because he's been very critical of Dana White and the Fertittas. So I think they take that kind of stuff personally, and it would have been a lot easier for them to re-sign him if he won this fight. But since he lost, it gives them an excuse to say, well, he's all washed up, so we don't want him.
Yeah,
but he's definitely not going to return.
Yeah, and I also understand that he was out of the top 10 pound-for-pound rating somewhere, and Stipe was 10th, and Roy, I guess, was 6th prior to this fight. So, but you're right. I mean, I don't think there's any reason for him to retire. I think people, you know, I mean, I still want to watch him.
Yeah, every now and then, I mean, he really surprises you. I know at one point he was trying to work to get his weight down because Dana White had said some things and kind of really rubbed him the wrong way and actually inspired him to try to lose some weight. He's working with Mike Dolce there,
mm-hmm.
who was an expert. But I think it was only like one fight where he showed any kind of difference in his physique, and then it seems like he hasn't really done any improvements on that. So I don't know if that would help him if he could really,
Well, it's hard to say, but he would look the part a little more, like someone said.
Conditioning-wise is where he struggles the most. Like we said, if it goes to decision, he's probably going to end up with the loss because he just can't hang in those later rounds.
And you just have to wonder if he's cheating himself, if maybe we've never seen the best Roy Nelson simply because of that fact. And someone once said that a trial lawyer goes into, or any lawyer for that matter, goes into court dressed in a nice suit, because that's you want to look the part of what you're doing, and you know, Roy, I'll take it from there. So.
And we had Ryan Jimmo beat Igor Pokorzhak by unanimous decision. That was a pretty decent fight there. Alexis Davis won over Rosie Sexton.
I heard there were some there were a lot of boos in that one.
There was a lot of submission attempts that didn't have anywhere near a chance of getting sunk, and Sexton just hung in through them all. So it wasn't really a lot of toe-to-toe fighting action. But they were saying before this fight, Alexis Davis is really the only significant threat to the women's champion there, Ronda Rousey. And after this fight, I don't think anybody would say that.
Her stock really sunk.
Yeah. Then we had a real surprise. Sean Jordan took out Pat Barry at the 59-second mark of round number one with a TKO. And, of course, Barry had an excuse after the fight. He said it was an eye poke that led to all that punishment, but I think it was a right hand and knocked him down, and Jordan just swarmed him and ended it. And then we had a couple Strikeforce guys go at it, Jake Shields versus Tyron Woodley. And Jake Shields actually won this one. He fought a smart fight, got a split decision win there over Woodley, and Woodley pretty much was willing to box him through most of the fight, and that's where I think Shields has his greatest strength. So he outlasted him and out-punched him and got the win. Go ahead.
Yeah, I guess he really showed some pretty, must have showed good defense. So Shields did stand up with him quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
It was, wow. Okay, well, good for Shields.
And then we had one of the bloodiest fights I've seen in a while. It started right off bloody because James Krause nailed Sam Stout in the forehead above the eye there, or actually on the side of the head, sort of, with a brutal head kick, and it was kind of like a shin to the head more than anything, and it just opened up a huge cut. And Stout went through almost the whole fight with it, and then ended up getting caught in a guillotine choke with 13 seconds left in the fight. So, unlucky 13 for him, I guess, got caught with the guillotine. But he fought hard. There's so much blood going on there. And I read some reports that Krause actually came in with, like, 3 weeks' notice or something like that. So he was freaking out about his drugs test, not knowing what, could come up, if anything. He's convinced he didn't take anything willingly, but for some reason he was all confused and upset and worried that something that he took might have some banned substance in it, and he'd be screwed. So I thought that was kind of a weird story, but that came up this week.
Yeah, exactly.
We had Sean Pearson beat Kenny Robertson by a majority decision. Roland DeLorme beat Edwin Figueroa by unanimous decision. Mitch Clark beat John McGuire by unanimous decision. And Eve Jabouin beat Dustin Pegg by split decision. A lot of decisions on this card. There's only two finishes on the whole card. It's kind of like the opposite of the last UFC event. There's so many stoppages in that one, but this one was almost all decisions. So it must not have been hard to give knockout and submission of the night.
Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, Rich, I do have to thank you for the text and keeping me posted on that. And so I was sitting next to Tony. I said, well, I haven't heard anything back, so I guess it's made it past the first round, you know. So the longer I didn't hear from you, actually, the better I was feeling. So.
Yeah, I had that. Go figure. My lone disconnection of the fight happened right during that. Right after the first round there, so I missed a round, and then I caught the end of the third round. So I could see that he was out boxing, for sure. But he didn't look like he had taken too much punishment either. He looked pretty good for going three rounds with Roy.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is definitely a big win, so I'm not sure where he's going next, but... there was talk of him and Frank Mir, which would be kind of an intriguing fight. So,
right.
We'll see what happens.
Well, there was some stories that the next big UFC event in Boston could be in trouble. And the Boston Herald reported that state red tape might actually knock out the fight's chances of happening. Because basically they've set it up so that there's rules barring foreign-born fighters from fighting without social security numbers, believe it or not. And the law has been in place since the sport was first legalized in 2009. So it kind of makes you think, well, without an all-American card, they can't do the fight. But I didn't read about it today. I know there was a headline today in some of the... links that I get about Dana White putting that rumor to rest and saying that's not true, that they're not in any jeopardy of having this fight. And I know they just put tickets on sale today. But anyway, like I said, the law's been in place since 2009. Under the rules, state officials are not allowed to issue a fighter's license without a Social Security card. That poses a problem for fighters such as Mauricio Rua, Thiago Alves, Yuri Alcantara, and Akira Kourasami, all of whom are currently scheduled to appear on the Boston card, and all of them wouldn't be able to do so without a Social Security card. And who is going to face Chael Sonnen in the main event? But the federal government does have a provision in place where a foreign worker may receive a temporary Social Security card after waiting through a 10-day grace period.
Now, is this just for MMA, or does it apply to baseball and football as well? Do you know?
Well, it says the law's been in place since the sport was first legalized in 2009, and they're talking, I assume, about MMA when they say the sport. So
well,
I think it's only...
I mean, almost every sport we have in this country is an international sport. We have athletes from all over the world competing in everything. I mean, you look at baseball teams and how many people there are from south of the border or from Asia. You know, the
right.
Japanese have had some all kinds of major league players. So I don't see why they would have a rule specifically for MMA and they wouldn't have it for... And look at even the NBA. If that's there's an international flavor there too. Hmm.
And the UFC came up with its own weird rule this week. They came up with a dress code for their fighters when they're traveling on the UFC's dime for publicity tours and other marketing related events. And it seems labeled specifically at at least one guy. Who doesn't really dress that formally, I guess, when he goes to these events, and that's Ben Henderson. He likes to wear flip-flops, I guess, and shorts. So now, effective immediately, fighters and talent traveling on press tours and PR marketing-related appearances are no longer permitted to wear shorts or flip-flops. Jeans are acceptable, and shoes are a must, according to this new rule. And I don't know what the impetus behind that is, why they really feel like they need to do that, but, you know, they are what they are. I guess they want them to make look more professional. The NBA does have a similar strict dress code that governs what the players can wear on the bench and when traveling between cities, and they actually take it farther than what the UFC has. So, I don't know. Maybe they're just trying to be more like the major leagues. And another UFC story, Dana White and some other people are really jumping all over Steve Mazzagatti. I don't know if you heard anything about this one, Tom. But
oh, yeah.
Mazzagatti got in trouble with White for something that he didn't even do in the UFC. But it was in the UFC, former UFC welterweight title contender John Fitch's fight against Josh Berkman. And the fight ended when Berkman locked up a guillotine choke and Fitch went unconscious. Before Mazzagatti even motioned to check the fighter's condition, Berkman let go of the hold and was standing up over his opponent, who laid motionless on the canvas. Dana White, as usual, had a lot of expletives to describe this one. And he said, quote, "Does anyone disagree with me that Mazzagatti's a fucking toolbox? I mean, he literally did nothing. Literally, when Fitch goes limp, he goes limp. He's out, and then Berkman rolls him fucking over, lets his head fucking flop to the thing, and then stands over him. He's literally like this, standing up over him before Mazzagatti even fucking gets in the picture."
Now, this is the CEO of a multi-million-dollar, maybe a billion-dollar corporation.
Oh, right, right. But it gets worse, believe it or not. It does get worse, because he goes on to say that he's sure, now that he's made these comments, that the Nevada Athletic Commission is going to pull a fastball. So he says, this is his quote, "The Nevada State Athletic Commission is going to keep this fucking guy around until he seriously hurts somebody. That guy is dangerous. He's dangerous. It's disgusting. At what point do you realize this guy is an incompetent fool and he's going to hurt somebody? I wonder what's going to happen when somebody seriously gets hurt in a Mazzagatti fight. What are they going to write it off to? Anything can happen. This is a combat sport and anything can happen. This guy is dangerous." And, Now that he said all this stuff, he says they're gonna put Mazzagatti in his next main event. He says they'll make him the main event now. Now because I said this, the Nevada State Athletic Commission will give him the Anderson Silva fight at UFC 162. It's not corrupt when you talk about the Nevada State Athletic Commission and the fact that they keep doing this. It's complete and total ego, because I keep complaining they will keep putting him front and center. And they actually are in charge, the Nevada Athletic Commission, of referee assignments for each particular show. Only fighters, believe it or not, have the right to complain if they do not want a certain person in charge of their fight.
Okay, they can complain, but that doesn't mean that the referee would be changed, correct?
Well, it doesn't have any further comment on that situation. Just
yeah.
says they do have the right to complain.
I mean, because I would think with the judging, you know, how many Cecil Peoples incidents have we had in the past? I mean, I don't even count them anymore. And I'd have to think that there'd be a lot of complaints about him. And I couldn't understand that, how he kept getting invited back again and again and again as to why the UFC would do this after some outrageous. But if it's the State Athletic Commission, I don't know. I don't get that. And while we're on this Mazzagatti thing, if you remember Lesnar Mir 1, when Mir had that knee bar, cranking that knee bar, and Brock was tapping. And, well, first off, Mazzagatti gave Brock, he took a point away for something that, if you recall that, I thought that was very uncalled for.
Yeah.
It was something. He said it was a punch to the head. I mean, come on. I know the thing. I know the sport. And it was, things were happening quick, but it was, I don't feel Brock Lesnar did anything wrong, even though I had my money on Mir that night. But I mean, come on, fair is fair. And then when Mir cranks that knee bar, which is a serious hold. I mean, you let that go on too long, and someone is going to be out for who knows how long. And
yeah.
Brock was tapping, and Mazzagatti, if you remember on the countdown to their second fight, when Brock was watching that, and he made a comment about Mazzagatti's porn mustache or something like that, you know. But yeah, I remember he was tapping, and Mazzagatti just. No, he just didn't catch it, I guess. I mean, because when someone taps, I mean, you know, you never want to tap out in front of the whole world. I mean, he's got, you know, everyone's got quite a tolerance for pain when you're all psyched out for this, but if you're caught, you're caught. So, I mean, I'm sure there's been other instances, too, but...
Well, Dana White hasn't been the only person to call him out for this one. I don't exactly know exactly who else made the comments, but I know that I did read some stuff earlier this week of other people criticizing the same thing, same situation. But the funniest comments that White made, actually I have to give him credit because when I read it, I laughed out loud. But basically, the UFC 162 is the next time that Mazzagatti is coming out to Vegas, or could potentially be reffing in Vegas, I guess you could say. Because that's going to be in Nevada. So he's subject to be on that card, and there's going to be a lot of people watching to see how many fights that he's going to be involved in for that UFC 162 card. They might just put him in all of them just to spite Dana White. Funniest quote of all, he says, the guy shouldn't even be watching MMA on television. On television, let alone fucking reffing it. He says Mazzagatti should watch MMA.
Well, I know
that's
that Mazzagatti, and I believe he started in K1, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he started off as a kickboxing referee.
I would have to say that's probably correct. I don't know for sure.
Yeah.
Another big story I got here, getting back to boxing. George Foreman is going forward with a big promotional company now. And he's got all his sons involved, all the Georges. But basically, he just started this big Foreman Boys Promotions. And it made its HBO debut on Saturday night with a featherweight title scrap between Puerto Rican sensation Juan Manuel Lopez and Mikey Garcia. I don't know if you talked about that fight yet, Tony. Did you mention that one?
Yes.
You did?
We got on the air, yeah. Garcia gave up the belt. He couldn't make weight, but he's still pretty much impressively dismantled Lopez.
Right. So, Foreman says there's nothing different about boxing since when he fought. Eight and 10-ounce gloves, and everyone who gets into the ring tries to knock the other guy's head off. You know, they all... operate the same way he did, but basically he says about his sons, they're all doing the groundwork and I just come in and get all the glory. All I have to do is show up and be the old George Foreman, the ex-boxer. It's a wonderful thing to work with your family. And they had a test run earlier this year with a smaller event in Austin, Texas. Despite being a veteran of more than 100 events as a fighter and a broadcaster, Foreman still found the learning curve to be steep. Said, what I learned most of all, and I think the boys learned too, it's a team sport. Two guys get in the ring and box, but on the outside, a whole team has to get together. You learn that you can't do it alone. Don King did not mind being offended by an offer. He always said, George, I'd rather have 1% of a whole lot than 100% of nothing. I learned to get in there to work, Foreman said. There's always profit, even if you just make a dime. Bob Arum is the same way. He doesn't try to take over. He just wants to be a part of success. So do I. So he's worked under both guys, and Arum. And hopefully he's a lot better as far as management-wise than those two guys.
Well,
he's had a lot of shady dealings in their history.
Yeah, and now his sons are going to be getting in the ring?
Well, I know he's already got a heavyweight son who's undefeated, Monk, but these other sons are just doing the management of the promotional company.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so he's just got the one. So, well, we'll see see if he's got the genetics, so we'll see what happens.
Right. And we had the big Francois Botha versus Joseph Parker fight, finally. And it's over, but so is Franz Botha's boxing career, because he announced his professional retirement after the fight, though he's actually in the process of, believe it or not, arranging exhibition fights with former world champions Evander Holyfield and Mike Tyson in Tanzania and the Congo to raise money for various charities. So Mike Tyson, believe it or not, still gonna fight, even though it's an exhibition. And the last I heard of Tyson being involved in any kind of exhibition, it was when they did the show on CBS where two different people with the same name switched places, and the white Mike Tyson came in and had to fight some professional in the real Mike Tyson's place. And it was brutal. The guy was at least a heavyweight, but he was not in shape at all. So, but anyway... I think it was Razor Ruddock he had to go up against. Somebody big. But he ended up surviving on his feet anyway. The other guy didn't really kill him too bad. But anyway, Botha has had 62 heavyweight fights, and his record reads like a who's who of boxing in the past 25 years. Fought Vladimir Klitschko, Holyfield, Tyson, Lennox Lewis, Michael Moore, Shannon Briggs, Michael Grant, and many more. And he says about his opponent, Parker, there, that you have to take him to the United States. There are so many fighters there that you can basically source what kind of fighter you want him to fight against. You have to be careful with him now that he is beginning to get known. You have to pick your opponents. You can select them based on whether they suit your fighter's style, yes, but that's not really what I'm talking about. There's never anything certain in boxing, but 80% is as low a chance as you go. Not 70%, certainly not 60%. You train and fight in the U.S. and you build up a record and you get noticed and you end up getting a title shot. He'll do that, I'm sure of it. He'll get a title shot if they handle him like that. And not sure how his son did. Doesn't really mention in here, but we talked about last week. His son is on the same card, Botha's son. So we'll see what he does there. But... another story coming out of this, Britain's David Hay. Vitaly Klitschko is set to fight WBC mandatory challenger Bermain Stivern, and then is widely rumored to be planning a pre-retirement fight against David Haye and another big earner.
And
of course,
in Loyola a few months ago, so it's not like he doesn't have any experience. Decent fighter. We'll just see how he steps up in class against Vitaly, who really beat the hell out of Chris Arriola a couple of years ago.
And Haye is actually set to fight Tyson Fury, actually, before going up against Butcher. Fury's unbeaten after 21 fights at heavyweight, and the bout with Haye could be worth up to £5 million, $10 million. Sparring partners often end up getting the title fights. Oh, go ahead, Tony.
To be honest, I think they smoked them.
All right. Let's see what else we got here. Talked about Garcia and Lopez there. Oh, another little Roy Nelson story I forgot to mention. Before the fight the other day, Roy probably made it almost impossible for him to go back to the UFC because he made a sort of racial comment about Daniel Cormier. So Nelson was asked about how he felt about Cormier saying he wanted to fight him for Dana White. Because obviously Big Country has criticized Dana White in the past, and it's pretty obvious they don't like each other. Nelson, after hearing that question, said he labeled the whole beef as an Uncle Tom move. From the abolitionist book Uncle Tom's Cabin, which effectively humanized the struggle of the slaves in the 1800s. But today, that label of an Uncle Tom is typically made to refer to someone, usually an African American, who goes out of their way to be subservient to another, usually to a white person, or actively tries to conform to the standards of white society. But it has been used in the UFC before, believe it or not. Rashad Evans and Quentin Rampage Jackson were going back and forth, and both Evans and Strikeforce champion King Mo Lawal took issue with Jackson's portrayal of himself as less than intelligent, labeling him in an interview with ESPN an Uncle Tom for playing into the ignorant stereotype some black men tend to get labeled with. But, of course, Lawal and Evans are both African-American, while Nelson is not, so apparently it carries more racial weight when he says it. But I don't know if under their code of conduct he would be punished for that. It's kind of a borderline thing. It's not really as bad as some of the other racial epithets he could have used. So, on the other hand, it's—I hate to say it—but you know, you look at the definition of an Uncle Tom, and he's kind of got a point. You know, white is white, right? It's a white guy. More ways than one. So, I don't know. It's just something they're trying to make news with, I guess. We'll see if anything happens.
I didn't think about this until recently. And I actually thought about this while I was sitting down eating dinner. Kind of like, where did you come up with the name of the Italian Stallion? I kind of made that up a couple of years ago while I was eating dinner. We were talking the other night, I was talking to a friend of mine about the World Wrestling Entertainment Hall of Fame and how they put guys in there, and they finally got Bruno Sammartino to go in it this year. And a lot of it, it's not like the Boxing Hall of Fame where they elect people. It's not like, okay, Arturo Gatti's up for the Hall of Fame this year, he's been retired 5 years, and they had a vote on it, and he made it. Or guys like Virgil Hill made it, Mills Lane, and they have different categories. Every year, it's like Vince McMahon either reaches out to people and he tries to get them in. Like, he tried to get Bruno in for years. And a couple of conspicuous guys that are not in there, Randy Macho Man Savage, who recently passed away a couple of years ago because of a long-time feud with him and Vince McMahon. And and Owen Hart, who passed away just over 14 years ago because of a lawsuit with Owen's wife, and she doesn't want him in the Hall of Fame. And it had me thinking. I said, you know, because World Wrestling Entertainment is a brand of wrestling. Sometimes they'll cross-promote and put guys like Nick Bockwinkel, who is a major AWA guy, and they'll put him in because of his contributions to the wrestling industry. And it had me thinking about the UFC, Ultimate Fighting. And I said, you know, because they say 20, 30 years down the road, Dana White, you know, decides to come out with a UFC, you know, Hall of Fame. And it's basically going to be what's going to happen to guys that he had a bad relationship with. You know, say he, and I'm just going to throw a name out there, you know, Brock Lesnar. You know, obviously Lesnar came in like a house of fire, and I don't really remember the circumstances of Lesnar leaving. But say they had, you know, they parted on bad terms, and Lesnar hates Dana White, Dana White hates Lesnar. Well, this pioneer, this guy that would be a huge name, you know, he's not going to be voted in. There's just going to be a big wall there, you know, between two strongly ego guys.
That's right.
The guy to go up against Dana White. You know, I always find reasons to trash him, and I thought of that one today.
Yeah, that's a good point because Frank Shamrock comes to my mind. Why isn't Frank Shamrock in UFC Hall of Fame?
I think he's already in the Hall of Fame, if I'm not mistaken. But Randy Couture, I mean, if he's not already in the Hall of Fame, it's probably a long shot that he's going to get in it. But Brock Lesnar, I'm not sure that Dana White hates it.
They didn't have a bad part.
I just used that name as I just pulled one out of the hat. You know, something I could think of. Obviously, I don't really follow it as much as I do, you know, with boxing. Like, in boxing, you know, it's not like there's a situation where, oh, my God, Don King hated Arturo Gatti or this person hated this person, so he's not going to get in the Hall of Fame. This is an entity where, like, to Vince McMahon, you know, either if he has heat with, like, a guy like where he had heat with Randy Savage for the last, I think, like, 15 or so years of Savage's life, or he has heat with Owen Hart's widow because of the circumstances of his death back in 1999, like, they're refusing induction to the Hall of Fame. You know, they don't want to be in the WWE Hall of Fame. Bruno Sammartino denied it for, you know, almost 20 years. And then they finally, I think Triple H reached out to him this year and got him, you know, to kind of, you know, bridge the gap. But that's a situation where it's not, there's no, like, voting. You know, it's not where you have so many people on a committee have to vote for this. It's the czar, basically, that is Vince McMahon or Dana White in UFC, world. And basically, I can just see where there's a situation where, you know, there could be, like, a budding of the egos and just a bunch of things that, I think, I just like to trash Dana White, any reason I could think of, and that was one that I thought of.
Any excuse will do. Equal opportunity Dana White bashing operation. So, anyway, another guy that comes to mind, I'm not sure if he's Hall of Fame material for his UFC experience in general, but guy who just retired this last night, actually, or no, last week. He's on the World Series of Fighting event there. What's his name there? Babalu Sobral, was it?
Well, no, he retired last night, right?
Oh, yeah, it was last night. He was in Bellator.
Yeah, right.
I'm thinking of somebody else. And he is one of the more famous examples of, you know, getting fired from the UFC. And I'll never forget this fight because I thought it was kind of a dick move myself. He held a rear naked choke on a guy. And the guy was, I don't know if the guy was tapping out or the referee was trying to pull him off. I think the guy had already passed out before he tapped out. And Babalu held on to the choke a little extra because apparently they had a lot of war words going on before the fight. And he just kind of wanted to really stick it to him, putting him to sleep and keeping him asleep for a little while. So the ref had to really pry him off this guy. after the fight, and Dana White pretty much immediately separated him from the promotion. And so he hasn't had good luck since then. He's gone 2-4 since I think he left the UFC, but he has a 37-11 record going into retirement here. So he might be a guy that's worthy of the Hall of Fame if there's a regular MMA Hall of Fame, but as far as UFC Hall of Fame, I don't know. But I wouldn't hold my breath if I was him on getting inducted.
Yeah.
No pun intended, holding your breath. But.
Yeah, I remember that. That was pretty awful.
So it shows you what not to do as an MMA fighter, I guess. But we'll see what happens. I don't know. Another good fight on that card last night. I didn't get to watch it, but I was watching the Bruins, believe it or not. Ended up letting the Blackhawks get back into it. But it was actually one of the one Bruins games I wanted them to lose because I predicted how the series would go on an article for feedcrossing.com where I do stuff that's syndicated, and I actually predicted that the Bruins would win 4-2 and that the Blackhawks would tie it up in game 4. So I guess you could call me the psychic now because I predicted it so far to a team. Well, they just got to win the next 2 games and then I'll be happy.
Mm-hmm.
But they're doing all right. They're not really making huge mistakes. It's just little stuff here and there that's lost them these last 2 games. And then to come back after they did last night, I was pretty impressed. I said they got it into overtime, never mind winning the game. Anyway, getting back to MMA, there was also the debut last night of this Fightmaster show. I only watched a few minutes of that, too. I got caught up in other stuff. It was a different setup, a lot different than The Ultimate Fighter from what I could see. And Randy Couture just talked about it. They start with 32 fighters and whittle it down to one. The fighters choose their coaches, their camps, and actually choose their opponents as well. So it's got a little different dynamic. Each camp has 4 spots. If any of the camps fill up right away, fighters have to choose a different camp. So Couture said he liked it. He's been coaching for a long time. He coached before he even started fighting, so he enjoys that experience. And it's a great group of talent, so he enjoyed the whole experience of taping the show.
I think it was interesting because the fighters would come up with questions like, well, one of them was, like I believe he said something along the lines of, what do you see in me that you could help, or how do you feel
you could help?
Yeah, and it was really interesting because most of the guys were really pretty cool about it. They said, "Hey, of all four of you, I'd be happy to coached by any of you." And then just going down the line like that, and it was interesting because they would not only critique the fight, then they'd say what they'd like to see how they connected. So this will really be interesting.
Yeah, I should definitely watch it a lot more. I'm pretty sure it's got to be somewhere online, so I'll end up watching the first episode.
All right, Rich. Now, Rich, let's assume you're on the show and you won your way into the house, and you've got these 4 guys. Okay, we've got Greg Jackson, Randy Couture, Frank Shamrock, and Joe Warren. It's okay. Now, what do you think?
Well, I don't think a lot of people know much about Joe Warren at all. Couture says he's the wild card in the bunch. I don't think he has a lot of coaching experience, but he's a great competitor, he says. And then there's the 2 fighters, Shamrock and Couture. They're the probably the guys with the most actual fighting experience that Bellator could draft for this. And there's Greg Jackson, who's got a lot of champions under his tutelage out there in Mexico.
Yeah, and in fact,
I like Couture. I think I would pick Couture because I've met him in person. I've seen his facility out there in Vegas. I've been to a couple events there. And I like the way he operates. His own son entered the sport and did pretty well. And actually surprised the shit out of me in his last Strikeforce fight by beating KJ Nunes.
Yes.
And with very little experience. I mean, the guy just kind of made a second decision to get into MMA in the first place, even though he had the opportunity almost all his life to get into it. He just kind of was a late bloomer and got into it in his 20s. And that says a lot about the father there. So I
right.
think I would like to train him, Randy. But,
you know,
Jackson,
yeah, it was exactly. Well, see, here was my thinking last night that, and someone asked Jackson very pointedly that, you know, Mr. Jackson, you do have quite a few world-class fighters. You have a lot on your plate as it is. And if I come on, if I choose you as my coach, are you going to be able to devote the time to me that I wish you could? Or, you know, because, which was a good question. And, of course, Greg said, oh, definitely, you know, you'll get the full attention of myself and the coaching staff. But that would be a concern. Now, as far as Frank Shamrock, Frank was, if you remember him from the early days, in the Pancration days, Frank was strictly a grappler. He didn't really have much stand-up at all. And in fact, he in one of those televised Pancration events from 96, I don't know if you go back that far, but there were open palm strikes, and Yukai Kondo knocked Frank out of the ring completely unconscious. He was about six rows back. It was strange. You know, it was a bizarre ending to the thing. And then Frank hooked up with Maury Smith because Maury Smith had the great kickboxing background, but he didn't have the grappling background. So remember, they formed the alliance. And Frank started evolving, and he was one of the early guys that really seen the whole picture. But my question about him, has he really stayed relevant? Because it's been a few years since he's been fighting. So, I don't know.
Well, he didn't go out in a good way either. I mean, he had some of the toughest fights in his career to end his career against Kung Lee and Nick Diaz. And as much as people love to hate Nick Diaz, I thought it was extremely classy for him to make sure that at the end of that fight, he helped Frank to his feet and told him, get up.
Yeah.
Let him go out at least standing. So, Shamrock, I've interviewed him a couple times over the years, and he's got a weird personality, and he's very very egotistical in a lot of ways. He's obviously got a lot to back it up. You know, he is a talented fighter, and he's been around in the sport. But I just don't I don't see him as a great coach. It just doesn't rub me as the type of guy that would be willing to spend a lot of time helping other people. It seems like he's more focused on himself in a lot of these situations.
Yeah, and if I remember right, in the IFL, now, of course, there could be other factors also, depending on your talent pool in the first place, but I don't recall him having a lot of success as a coach in the IFL.
All
right. Well, and then Joe Warren, of course, he calls himself the baddest man on the planet. Isn't that a knockoff of someone else we've heard of, that phrase, baddest man on the planet? Yeah. And that's Joe Warren's moniker now, the baddest man on the planet. You know, so.
All right.
Well, this will definitely be a fun season.
Yeah, I'm going to definitely catch up on it, and I'll have more to say about it next week, of course, because I'll have watched the first and the second episode. It's on Wednesday night, so it doesn't interfere with our show. So it should be no problem for any of our listeners or us watching it. So I'll check that out next week for sure. Another story I have, it's the last story I have here set up for this, but we got some of the acting public involved in MMA now. Canadian-American actor Dean McDermott, with the wife of Tori Spelling, got in a Twitter battle that has now turned to an official MMA fight, apparently on the celebrity boxing circuit. We're going to do an MMA fight. And it was all about a tattoo. And I have no idea what's going on with this tattoo, what it was, but it's being referred to in this article as some kind of tramp stamp that this guy got. And this guy named Anthony Bracco was on Twitter, and he pretty much just made fun of the guy enough, this McDermott enough, that he got challenged to a fight. So this Bracco put out a tweet. Dean, his quote is, Dean got a tramp stamp, and I tweeted LMAO, and he challenged me to a fight. Let's get it on. And they exchanged tweets for almost a week. And Bracco further provoked McDermott with messages like, "We all know Tori wears the pants. Tori, do you mind if I knock your husband's block off?" So finally, McDermott had enough and challenged Bracco to an actual fight, posting, "Dude, put your money where your mouth is. Let's get in the ring, man. You talk a lot of shit. Let's throw hands, bitch." So the fight is actually going to take place October 5th in Los Angeles to be featured as one of the fights in celebrity boxing as set by its founder, Damon Feldman, but instead of boxing, the two are going to engage in a mixed martial arts match. And believe it or not, maybe the folks over at Fightmaster missed out on this opportunity because Jose Canseco...
Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Yeah, Tony?
Hey. I'm here.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, Rich, you back?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
Can you for a second?
Well, yeah, we lost you the minute you came on with Jose Canseco. There must have been some NSA satellite or something that picked up on that name and did something. The minute you said
Jose,
that, I swear, Jose Canseco, bang, there it went.
Well, it must be the steroids thing. Still trying to get him on steroids or something.
Hey, now here's my question about that fight. Do either one of these guys have any experience, any training? Do we know anything about either one of them?
Well, I would think the actor probably has a better chance of having an MMA experience, but I can't really say. It doesn't sound like it.
Mm-hmm.
I think they just want to fight each other because they got into an internet thug situation.
Well, now let's hope that this is going to be on. We haven't seen any celebrity boxing in years. You know, going back to the Paula Jones days. You know, and boy, they had some interesting. Remember Paula Jones and Tommy Hardy.
The Octomom was doing the celebrity boxing circuit for a while, but then, believe it or not, they got pissed at her because she went and did a pillow fight or something. From what I remember, she got involved in a pillow fighting league. So they got pissed at her, or she didn't fulfill her contract or something. So now she's not doing that. But Damon Feldman's had a lot of craziness happen in the last few years. I think he at one point almost committed suicide.
Ooh.
That was the last time I think I heard something major in the news about him. But Jose Canseco is involved in this story because he's going to train McDermott for this fight. So I guess that tells you how much experience he has if he doesn't even know that Jose Canseco probably sucks as a trainer. But it's going to be three two-minute rounds, and it's going to be a fundraising match that will benefit autism. So it is going to do some good for these two guys to beat each other up. So we'll see. It becomes an entertaining event. I don't know, but very interesting. I got to give it that. You guys there?
We're here.
Hello? Oh, I thought we dropped you. So I guess on that note, what do we got for upcoming boxing that we got to watch out for this weekend, Tony?
Well, this weekend we got the big trash talk between Adrian Broner and Pauline Alanaji Saturday night. Showtime, since Malinaji usually is one of the Showtime announcers. Obviously, he can't announce his own fight, so they're bringing in Bernard Hopkins to do that. Hopkins also, he has been faced with a mandatory title defense against Sergey Kovalev, who was pretty impressive last week on NBC, dismantling Cornelius White in three rounds. But that obviously has not been signed yet.
Dana and Malignaggi, the Malignaggi's welterweight title. And I guess what will be most interesting here is this is obviously the biggest man that Brown has fought. He's coming up but Malignaggi's never been a big puncher. This is a fight. We got to see how much of his power Broner can carry up the one. He's against the fight, but and even though Malignaggi's not a big puncher, he's still quick fisted and he's still physically a bigger man. A lot of trash talk. These guys really don't like each other. Broner overall is a hard guy to like. You know, I mean Mayweather does some stuff, but he's never been to the point of Broner who has been seen flushing $20 bills on a toilet. You know, he's really good at alienating a crowd real fast.
How do you see this going, Tony?
I don't think Malignaggi has the power to beat him. I see it kind of going like Malignaggi's fight with Amir Khan a couple years ago, where he fought Khan hard. You know, he gave a good account of himself, but he just couldn't keep the stronger fighter off. He couldn't, you know, hurt him. I know Khan got that fight stopped in around 11 rounds. I don't know if he'll stop Malignaggi, but I think Broner will, be able to comprehensively win a decision. I'm rooting for Malignaggi. I'd like to see him win, but I don't see it.
Even though Broner's going up in weight, you don't think that's going to be the factor?
I don't think it'll be a big enough factor.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll see what happens.
And also, I don't think we ever talked about this on the show, but apparently the reason Bernard Hopkins has a new opponent coming up is because Cairo Moratt could not get a visa. But I never actually heard anything about why they refused to get a visa.
You know what's funny is Moratt actually emailed him out today that he has been approved for a visa, but obviously not in time for July 13th, which is weeks away, but he has gotten approved for a visa, but Sergey Kovalev is now the mandatory title defense. So Moratt not getting that visa is either a blessing or a curse. You know, it could be a curse because, you know, he's missing out on this major title opportunity. At the same time, it could be a blessing because, you know, I don't think he has the credentials, and it could be another situation similar to back about 10 years ago when one distinguished challenger from France came over by the name of Mourad Hakkar to fight Bernard Hopkins, and it was a disgrace. Even though Hopkins is 10 years older, I mean, I don't know much about Mourad, but I didn't like his chances. And now we have Kovalev as the new number one contender, even though Mourad has gotten his visa.
All right. Well, we're going to work on getting Soa Pelele for next week. We apologize to those who tuned in expecting to hear him on the show tonight, but apparently he's training right now over there in Australia. We're going to set up something, either a pre-recorded interview or get him on live next week.
And just to let you know, I mean, I was politicking a lot last week, talking to people. I got a few verbal commitments of people that like to be on our show. I talked to David Price, who was a manager, who was actually a former sparring partner of mine. He had three fighters on the card. So I wouldn't mind maybe even doing a situation like we've done before and having three guys on at the same time. I'll talk to him more in depth about that. Also talked to Garrett Wilson, the Ultimate Warrior, who just lost a fight over in Romania, but he's looking for a rematch. He's been climbing the cruiserweight ladder. Had a win over Omar Chica just about a year or so ago. So we're going to try to get him on. We didn't get a chance to talk to Tex Powell, but I might see him at the next show. And just sitting there, I've been seeing Neopolitics. And I actually sent an email to Antonio Tarver, so I'm dying to get him on, and I haven't heard back yet. So if you have any connections with Tarver, try to pull some strings. I'd die to have him on.
Well, I'll have to look through my email and see if we've gotten any contact with his management.
Because remember, Carver and I were co-starred in the same movie.
Yeah. Rocky Bye.
Rocky Balboa, right? Second one?
Yeah. That was the one.
All right. Well, I guess that's all for us tonight. I will be back full steam next week with no technical difficulties. I've got a way around this situation now. I got a backup laptop and user. So it should be smooth running next week. And we should be able to set it up for conference calling so that we'll have to all call in like we did this week.
Okay.
So look forward to that. We'll either have Soa on next week, or Tony, if you can get somebody, we'll have a booked, completely solidly booked show with a couple guests. We'll figure something out. If I have to pre-record the interview with Soa, then I might as well just do it as a separate show, because you know, it won't be really good to have just one voice interviewing the guy, you know. Mm-hmm. Unless I can spin that off into a magazine article.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's all I got. So you guys got any final thoughts?
No, just, looking forward to the weekend, watching a fight, and just hoping to see everybody out next week. If you get a chance, go on the Fight News Unlimited page and check out my article from last week's fight.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. Well worth it. Captured everything. I felt like I was there again.
I probably should have been there, but...
Next time, Rich.
We'll
do it.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening in, and we'll see you next week.
All right, guys. As always, let's enjoy the fights. Talk to you next week.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Bye-bye.